Oscar, I've heard from Bob Hecht, by the way. He sent me an email in response to my story saying that Samuel Hecht Jr. emigrated from Hanover, not Heidelberg. That was his statement regarding all of my stories about Bob Hecht. He's due back in court on the 8th of February, by the way, which is Wednesday. You know, isn't it fascinating that the New York Times and Bloomberg News made the big splash first in reporting on the Mets' decision to return Euphronius Vaes, considering Pinchy and Punchy Sulzberger and Mayor Bloomberg sitting on the Mets board? I mean, isn't it about time that these news organizations run up front in every story on the subject, a statement describing their connection to the museum?
Well, this is something I felt for some time, going back 30 years, when I had problems with various New York Times reporters, candidly, and recently Ernestine Boland, for example, where they wouldn't discuss any of these issues. So it's perfectly, unfortunately, normal behavior. When people have conflict of interest roles, as Sulzberger does, on the Board of Trustees, he's functioning in both capacities. As a trustee, it's his job to protect his fellow trustees, and therefore his role as owner of the New York Times reflects that. And so, unfortunately, I am not surprised, and I've watched this for some time. Somewhere along the line, we mentioned Nicholas Gage in that interview, in our
interview.
In our previous interview.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that only yesterday, 30-some-odd years after the Nicholas Gage articles, a New York Times reporter finally mentions Nicholas Gage's articles, which were fundamental in establishing that the Euphronius Vaes was plundered from a specific tomb in Italy. So,
but the New York Times comes out, one of the first newspapers to come out with a story about the Euphronius going back. And then, some of the other smaller newspapers pick up from the exact story from the New York Times, and public opinion starts getting shaped by whatever the New York Times has written. And it's all very factual. There's no real, discussion. So the readers are left with, sort of the dictate of what the New York Times has
And also the stories, the stories
coming from, what
it's trusting. All that's fit. As I said about the New York Times, they publish all they see fit to print. But the issue is, of course, not only are they all getting using New York Times as a standard, because the New York Times gets official press releases from the Times, but there's something else involved that none of these articles mention, that Le Compagnie Philippe is an employee of the trustees, and when de Montebello.
The director of the Metropolitan Museum.
Yes. He is the Lecomte. He works for the trustees. He serves with their pleasure. All the articles state that de Montebello did this, de Montebello said that. But, in fact, let's talk about the Times alone. They know their boss, the owner of the Times, is on this board of trustees, along with other people. And it's the board of trustees who will make the final decision. And it's the board of trustees, Mayor Bloomberg, Sulzberg, and by the way, someone else named Shelby White. They're the ones who are directing the Montebello, and they're the ones who will make the final decision. None of this, what I'm saying to you right now, none of this ever appears in a New York Times article.
Now, the museum, the Metropolitan Museum, has pledged to return the Euphronius and some of the Hellenistic silver, and four other vessels. I don't know what those four other vessels
They were stolen vessels from Italy, which that's why they're returning.
Do you know which ones they are?
No, it doesn't matter, but they're four of hundreds of stolen objects. Let's
put it that way. But the condition is that they want long-term loans from Italy, and along with the right to excavate. I don't know what the dynamic of that is, how many years they're requesting to excavate, or but another stipulation is that the Met would have no liability regarding its purchase of the Euphronius Vaes back in 1972, etc. they say that it was purchased in good faith, in other words. So what are your thoughts about that?
Oh, boy, a lot. It's manifest that the Metropolitan Museum of Art, i.e. the trustees whose names I just mentioned, are asking for a ransom from Mitley. If you want the material back, you must pay a ransom. The ransom is that you must allow us to keep the objects for some time, you must give us loans, and you must not say that we were bad guys, that we stole the vessel, that we knew it was stolen. But from day one, the Metropolitan Museum of Art knew, all the staff knew, everyone in the archaeological art community knew that the vase was plundered from a destroyed tomb in Italy at the command of course, museum and collectors, you see. As for good faith, in my book, The Lie, I state what good faith is very loud and clear. When a museum director or curator or trustee says that they purchased an object in good faith, what it means is that the dealer who sells it to them can guarantee, number one, that the site from which these objects were plundered is now destroyed so no one can trace it, that the objects were smuggled out of the country of origin, that all the bribes were paid, that the objects were then shipped to America and entered legally. That's what in good faith means. And indeed, when the comp says he bought it in good faith, that's exactly what he means.
Well, let's go back to when Tom Hoving bought the Euphronius. It's puzzling to me that Hoving didn't realize where the Euphronius might be coming from via Bob Hecht, because the FBI apparently has been on Bob Hecht's case since the 1950s, and Hoving and Hecht met in Italy first in 1956. He didn't purchase the Euphronius from Hecht until 1972, which would be almost 20 years later, and during those years, Hecht continued to deal in a major way.
Hoving knew then, as every museum director knew then and now, there's no difference, he's not any different than any other, every museum director, every museum curator knows that every dealer, I repeat, every dealer, talking antiquities now, of course, sells plundered art, along with forgeries, which are alleged to be plundered art, of course, but leave that aside. There is no way whatsoever, no way, that Hoving can... his employee, Dietrich von Bothma, can claim that they didn't know that this was stolen. They didn't know that Hecht sold stolen goods. And your question reflects that. They knew all about him. He was one of the best-known collectors for years. He was kicked out of Turkey. He had been caught with stolen coins there, etc., etc. He was known as one of the most notorious dealers, i.e. sellers of plundered, stolen art. And yes, it was known in 1972 to everyone in the museum.
The other question is about Sotheby's role in all of this, and why it's puzzling to me why the Italian lawyers are letting Sotheby's off the hook. I mean, they say that Sotheby's was led by Hecht and Metatrade to do whatever they did. I mean, I guess regarding the Hunt auction and so on of the Euphronius pieces. Do you see it that way?
Well, to be frank, I don't. I can say this to you. I don't know the dynamics of it, but that they had some arrangement with Sotheby's or any other auction house or dealer, that doesn't faze me at all. That's normal, good faith behavior. What the public should know, a lot of them don't, is that auction houses are dealers. And when they deal with antiquities, they're dealing with plundered, stolen art, as well as, of course, I mentioned before, forgeries. So that all auction houses that sell antiquities are exactly the same as all dealers who sell antiquities, both being dealers in antiquities. And the great majority of what they sell, and we're going by, I'll be generous, 95%, are plundered, stolen objects, known to the people who sell it and known to the people who buy it. So I don't know exactly what's going on in the mind of these two guys, but the answer has to involve something what I just said. That has to be part of the picture. But there's some political issue between...
So you think that Sotheby's is innocent in all this?
Oh, no,
or
no, on the contrary.
Tougher to bring down because they're a huge company. And a
I don't know. Innocent. They've been selling plundered art for generations. I don't know if they're innocent. But what I don't know is, what, of course I wouldn't know that, what the dynamics are between Sotheby's and how they deal undercover with specific sellers, you said. That I can't speak to. But they are guilty of selling plundered art? Absolutely.
Would it be productive for the Italians to convene a call for a trial here in the U.S.?
Well, I don't think they can.
Would it be easier to get documents here?
Well, what I would say is that they can't conduct a trial, but I think they should appeal to the district attorney. Not to the mayor, he's in conflict of interest, so they can't appeal to him, can they? But they can appeal to the governor. They can appeal to the United States. I think they should appeal to the United States. I think this is a crucial issue affecting American integrity and Italian integrity, and demand that, since it involves international trade, maybe the FBI should be involved, I don't know, but at least the district attorney should investigate this. That they can and should do. As such, they can't, of course, conduct the trial themselves, but they can petition the United States to conduct the trial and turn over evidence that they have to the appropriate authorities, which may begin here at maybe the district attorney.
Is there a point that you'd like to make? Another point?
Well, my mind is answering the question.
About the current issues.
Well,
I mean, post the announcement that
what
the,
I would say,
the Met is going to return the Euphronios.
What I would say is this. It would be humiliating and for the Italian government to allow the Metropolitan Museum of Art and other museums, by the way, in the same situation, to demand a ransom for the return of material that was stolen from Italy, okay? The Italians should demand immediately the return of the vase, no conditions, no ransom. And I would even say as a penalty, they should refuse to, for the years, to refuse any loans from Italy to the Metropolitan.
But they're not doing that.
And there's something wrong.
What's the bottleneck? What do you think is the bottleneck there?
I think that I'll give the best answer, the best moral answer. The Italians, rightly so, are so eager to get it back that they think we have to do this to get it back. Let's do this as long as you get the vase back. And I'm saying that's a crucial mistake. No ordinary criminal, no lower class criminal in America, when caught, can make a deal with his captors and say, oh, well, now let me keep this money I stole for just a few more years, and when I return it, what's left, you will not indict me, you see, even though we both know I stole this money. And that's what the Mutatis Mutandis, that's what the Metropolitan Museum trustees are asking the Italians to do, to submit to these conditions which are improper, immoral, and totally wrong. And Italy will get the vase back.
But if they have a trial here to get more of their stuff back, then they could probably get documents, request documents from the Metropolitan Museum. Is that the way it would work?
I think, I don't know if that's actual law.
The Metropolitan Museum would not want to do that.
Well, they can go to the World Court, by the way. You see, I don't think they can come to America and make a trial. Obviously, it'd have the Americans to do it. What they ought to realize is that if they do win this case honorably, and that means get it back immediately without ransom, then they will get a lot of other material back from all the other museums in this country. Again, university museums as well as private museums that have stolen property from Italy. I'm only speaking about Italy here because other countries are involved also. But don't blow this case, Italy. Get it back on your conditions. No ransom. And get it back right now. And that includes the 15 objects stolen from Argentina. You see, plundered from Argentina. And if you have to appeal to the governor or to the President of the United States, do it.
Oscar, thank you very much for your perspective.
What is your background, Mazur?
My December 25th interview with Oscar White Mascarella, Near East expert, ancient Near East expert at the Metropolitan Museum. AKA the whistleblower. Let's address the latest debacle over the looting of ancient art from Italy, as New York Times art critic Michael Kimmelman, in regarding antiquities, some changes, please, 12-8-2005. terms the current Rome Antiquities trial in which Bob Heft and Marion True are charged with trafficking antiquities. What's the problem with the New York Times taking the high road, as in the Kimmelman piece, and moralizing about what should be done to stem the flow of looted antiquities across borders and into museums like the Met?
Well, you say he takes the high road. I say he takes the low road. This article is one of the most hypocritical and unprofessional things I've ever come across, even for the New York Times. Because what it establishes is that Kimmelman has gladly accepted the role of pimp from line one of the story, from his boss, Arthur Oak Sulzberger. It's a role that goes back to his colleagues, Grace Gluck and John Cannaday, and continued by all their New York Times colleagues and successors. The only honest Times report I've come across, there were two in the last 35 years, are Nicholas Gage and the late John Hess. Ask boss Arthur, Punchy Sulzberger, why he and his trusty colleagues at the Met, issued the order via his employee, Le Comte Philippe Launis de Montebello, that no staff member can speak to reporters. He knows that I have not and will not obey this order. What Kimmelman doesn't mention, which is so manifest in this article about museums buying stolen art, is that he's an employee of Arthur Oak Sulzberger, Sr., Punch, as we call him, as he's known. The Times is a family-run newspaper, even though Sulzberger Jr., Pinchy, is technically now the publisher. That Kimmelman's boss is a member of the Metropolitan Museum of Art Board of Trustees for decades, and for decades has been a member of the museum's acquisition committee, is not mentioned. And that Kimmelman's boss was one of the most active and enthusiastic purchasers of the Euphronious Vase. That Sulzberger used his position as owner of the New York Times to accord the vase unprecedented publicity in the 70s. And not only that, Punchy has been an active supporter of world plunder and thefts for decades. These are things that are not mentioned. All right, Kimmelman, by not mentioning that he's an employee of this man, Sulzberger, it takes a salve from him. Hypocrisy is the wrong word. Dishonest is the correct word.
So you don't agree that the Met, the Cleveland Museum, the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, for instance, bring together cultures from around the world and act as safe houses for civilization, as Kimmelman argued. Do you agree with that?
Agree with it. It's the very opposite. How can you employ people, encourage people to destroy a tomb, a site? I've been walking around the Near East for years, and I can tell you in Turkey and Iran, Greece, wherever you go, you see holes in the ground. Dynamite, battering poles, bulldozers. All the objects are removed, sent to the various dealers who smuggle them out of the country of origin, all to be sold to these museums you mentioned, and many others, including university museums. And don't forget that the university museums, Harvard, Princeton, Missouri, Indiana, are major plunderers and destroyers of this planet's history, along with the others. Presidents of university museums that purchase plundered art should order all their staff to cease purchasing and receiving on loan any antiquity, or advise or authenticate any possessor of antiquities.
Well, Kimmelman is saying that countries like Italy, Turkey, and others simply cannot always provide the same protection and care as the American museums can, you know, the Elgin marbles argument.
Isn't that wonderful? American bordellos also give care and sanctuary to kidnapped women from Yugoslavia, Ukraine, Greece, South Africa, and China, don't they? They take these young girls, they kidnap them, put them in chains, and send them to bordellos in America. They give them protection, don't they? Do you blame the person whose apartment's burglarized? Do you blame them for the burglary? Would Kimmelman and collector and Met trustee Shelby White consider the action disputed if their apartments are broken into and robbed? It should be emphasized that these people are lying.
Kimmelman also talks about a fair compromise, where, say, the Metropolitan Museum of Art would have long-term use of, say, Italy's disputed treasures in return for the Italians reclaiming ownership.
A fair compromise. Would Kimmelman and Shelby White accept as a fair compromise that the Pumperoli have permission to keep stolen items from their apartment for long-term loans?
dug out of some farm in Sicily to end up in a museum like the Met. There, he says, it can be studied, widely seen, rather than become booty in some billionaire safe in Zurich, Shanghai, or Tokyo.
Is that right? There's no difference between Bunky Salzberg and Lecomte Philippe de Montebello and all the others in the Met Board of Trustees who've been supporting theft and plunder for years, and all those collectors. The objects are staying in the ground until it's excavated scientifically, where people spend years on a site and document every single object found and its context. That's how we know about our ancient history. But what these people are doing is utterly destroying documentation of our human past. All the names I mentioned, all the museums are actively engaged in erasing this planet's history. Like Dietrich von Bartman, quoted as saying, a pot's a pot.
Aside from greed, is there an ulterior motive?
Lust, power, greed. All these people are rich people.
Do they want to destroy the planet's history? Is it being done intentionally?
In some cases, that's correct. I write about this in my book, The Lie Became Great. I see it as a sick collaboration. If you look at the language, I had to have it. A lust for antiquities. Collecting antiquities is rape. With all the euphemisms of the Kimmelmans, Lecomte Philippe, and the Salzburgers, it's rape. All these people are justifying their destruction, their power to have these objects in their apartment. Bring their guests in and say, golly gee, look what I have. Power and perversion of the wealthy. These are the people who are encouraging it, who are authorizing it, who are the recipients of it. Plunder does not exist without the existence of these people.
But Kimmelman also put some of the blame on the Italians, saying their laws encourage criminality when it comes to antiquities, because the authorities can seize the property around where the ancient art is found, not just the art, according to a 1939 Italian law.
Well, I think Mr. Kimmelman's apartment is part of the land, isn't it? I think Shelby White's apartment is part of the land. Imagine someone to break into Kimmelman's and White's apartment, took what they wanted, destroyed what they didn't need, left the apartment in shambles, brought their plunder to Italy, like Guittomboroli. And then these guys can say, well, Kimmelman didn't take care of his apartment. Shelby White didn't take care of her apartment. There wasn't a policeman in every room there. There wasn't an army of guards around the apartment block. That's what these people are saying, and all our rationalizations.
Kimmelman acknowledges that showing loans from Shelby White, who's also a Met trustee and major donor, is a problem for the Met. The New York Times is finally acknowledging that. But he doesn't say that she also writes for the New York Times.
And Kimmelman doesn't mention Salzburg. My wife reminded me the other day that you discussed the Met-Salzburger conflict of interest first in your widely read piece, The Scoop, Sotheby and the Sign Euphronius. So the Times had no choice but to come out with it, as reporter Aiken did, obliquely in the piece that followed Kimmelman's story. But Shelby White's writing for the Times is irrelevant because they're just little shots. The crucial thing is that Kimmelman is covering, protecting, getting paid to write that article, which is in fact a cover-up. It's like someone writing an article saying John Gotti was an honest businessman, went to church every Sunday, gave away turkeys, was a devout Catholic.
Kimmelman says museums should devise tougher standards, accepting the burden of proof.
I want Shelby White, when her apartment's broken into and the Tombrelli take her stuff to Italy, to provide the same burden of proof.
He says they should have third-party committees sign off on issues of provenance.
Who would these third parties be? You know it's not going to be me, who's an authority on provenance and provenience, and it's not going to be honest archaeologists, that we do know. It's like saying when the police capture someone who's stolen something, are you going to have a third party come in and decide if in fact this is true? Well, we have the courts in that case. These guys don't mean the courts.
And then he says the museum-going public should be more vigilant. Is there a problem here?
The public doesn't know anything about it.
Kimmelman also endorses the British way of doing things. In Britain, if somebody finds something ancient in the ground, they can sell it. And if the government wants it, it has to match the market price.
But that's irrelevant to the present issue.
This is what Berlusconi wanted to do, which is give people 5% of whatever they dug up and then turn over the item to the state.
I don't want to discuss it because it's irrelevant. It's nothing to do with the facts here. What he's saying is totally irrelevant to the fact that countless Americans, Kichiquan Bop was one of the main plunderers, the comp of Leib Dillon, they have been encouraging the destruction of this planet's history for decades, the cultural property of Italy, Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and so on, encouraging the plunderer, encouraging the smuggling. It has nothing to do with 5%, 10%. That's a red herring.
And is it intentional? Do they want to erase the history?
They don't care. I've talked to dealers and collectors. One dealer said he wanted it madly. He couldn't care less about rape and plunder. Neither can financier and collector Michael Steinhardt or Jonathan Rosen or Jody White at all. If you read the language collectors use, it's all about power. And they use their power to employ pimps like Pimmelman to propagandize. Pimmelman is not the only one. Grace Gluck's been doing it for years. Also Holland Carter, Rita Reif. All the so-called art critics who review an exhibition of plundered art, of plundered objects in the Times, and never once say that they're plundered objects.
Can you discuss the members of the Board of Trustees a little more? During the time of the Euphronius acquisition, who were some of the trustees?
The only reason you're on the Board of Trustees is if you're very wealthy, otherwise end the discussion. Number two, you have something to donate. Except, why was Henry Kissinger a member of the Board of Trustees?
Is he still on the Board of Trustees?
No, he's not. He was a member for years. He had power. He could handle things privately in the State Department. I met a State Department man once regarding Turkey's Lydian treasure, and he told me that Ashton Hawkins, the consigliere of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, went to him in the State Department to officially ask on the part of the Board of Trustees, the mayor of New York City and the rich and powerful, to get those Turks off the Met's back. I asked him what he had done. He said he told them he wouldn't do it. I'm talking now about a man from the State Department. Now, you go back to 1973, around the time the Euphronius purchase and my firing. You have the mayor of New York City, John Lindsay, who was a personal friend of Hoving's for years, who also worked together with Dillon and the Rockefellers. You got the controller of the city of New York, the president of the city council. Over decades, people who held these elected public offices have participated in and accepted every theft and crime committed by the trustees and their employees, the directors and curators. So in 1973, we have Arthur Sulzberger, the Houghton family, C. Douglas Dillon, Francis Plimpton.
And now?
Well, the present trustees, including Mayor Michael Bloomberg, also of Bloomberg News, are loyally trying to protect the past trustees, the director and the curator involved in the theft, each a powerful and very rich individual, also their museum and their employee, LeCompte. Punchy is on the acquisitions committee. Pinchy is on the regular board of trustees. A major component of this whole thing is the conflict of interest involved with the mayor of New York City, the comptroller, president of the city council, and all members of the board of trustees. Together with this collector, Shelby White, Paula Cussey, the Houghton and David Weil families. So in 1973, Sulzberg was a major component of the acquisitions committee, along with C. Douglas Dillon, and buying the Euphronius vase. And up until now, 2005, Sulzberg has been defending that and covering that up. And Kimmelman is showing us that he's still going to cover up the role of Sulzberg in the purchase of the vase. The name you dare not speak, Sulzberger. The trustees rejecting demands of then Greek and Roman curator Dietrichon Bothma and LeCompte Philippe returned the so-called Lydian treasure to Turkey after years of ignoring the Turkish claims and demands for its return. This action occurred only because if the Turkish legal suit against the Met had gone to public trial, the evidence from internal Met documents would have embarrassed them. These documents manifestly demonstrate that from day one, the trustees, Sulzberg et al., director holding, and the curator involved, von Dietrichon Bothma, knew that the objects derived from a plundered and destroyed tomb in western Turkey.
Now, you opposed the acquisition of the Euphronius vase. Can you tell me what happened to you as a result of taking that position?
When Hoving came in, he began an absolutely fascist control I'm not being flip when I say that. People were threatened. They were fired. There was no discussion of or opposition.
He was the parks commissioner first.
He was the parks commissioner. As parks commissioner, he was on the board of trustees, and then became director of the museum. Just as Sulzberger was on the acquisition committee as a board member, and then became chairman of the board. I've been threatened with firing. Then the National Labor Relations Board stepped in and stopped it. But on February 24, 1973, I was called by a reporter from the New York Times named David Shari. I spoke at length. He only quoted me on certain things. I told him absolutely the boss's provenance, being an American dealer. I told him absolutely the boss's provenance, being an Armenian dealer in Beirut, was a red herring. In fact, I coined a phrase they were furious at. I said, I wish I knew the Armenian word for Deus ex machina. For this man, Serafian, who was made up as the guy who had the Euphronius. That was a Friday, and the following Monday I was called aside by someone. I don't know if he swore me to confidentiality, but I never revealed his name except to my lawyer to this day. It just came from a meeting of the Staff Policy Committee, where Ashton Hawkins, acting under orders from Thomas Irving, announced, quote, we are definitely firing him now, end of quote. And he cited that the Shari article that I dared to challenge the trustees in print. And that was the final thing. The court case lasted years and years. Yes, I opposed the purchase of the Greek vase. I was the only one in the museum who did so. And I have to tell you, very few of my colleagues came to my aid. There were a number came to my trial to testify to my character, my integrity, my honesty, whatever. But we could not, because of a quirk, a legal thing, we could not bring up why I was fired. But we won anyway, because all the other charges were made-up charges. In discovery, my lawyer and I found letters between C. Douglas Dinlan and Ashton Hawkins. There were many letters. We selected eight. Everyone discussed the strategy how to fire me. My lawyer said we would bring them to court, submit them to the judge. But the judge said they could not be used according to lawyer-client privilege because everyone was signed by Ashton Hawkins. It wasn't until a Gotti trial that the judges were onto this. But if you have an in-house hired lawyer, he's the consigliere. In those days, no one thought of this. So every letter, because it was written by Ashton Hawkins, he's vice president of counsel, the judge says, these will not be admitted into court.
You contend that what percentage of the artifacts in the museum are looted?
In my department, ancient Near East, it's mixed, and there's been a pullback on buying antiquities. If you go to the Greek and Roman room, I call it the plunder, the temple of plunder, the great majority are plundered over the years. There's even one object stolen from another museum. They know it's stolen from a museum, but they refuse to return it. It's a griffin head. In the Department of Arts of Africa, etc., every pre-Columbian object, everyone, is plundered, and the tomb site's totally destroyed. This is known to Sulzberger, known to the curator, known to Lecomte, Philippe de Montebello. But other departments play a major role in plunder, the Asian Art Department, where hundreds and hundreds of objects from temples and tombs from all over Cambodia, Thailand, China, are there just to decorate vitrines in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And Dylan played a major role in that because he put up a lot of money for these that has supported the plunderers, paid the plunderers, so that they were smuggled out. So the Far East Department is packed with stolen objects. Egyptian? I don't know. I really don't know about that record here. I think they've been buying some, but I don't know enough to go on.
And then what percentage would you say are fake?
Well, very few in exhibit right now. I discuss in the live, but there's only one, I think, the harp player, that is probably a forgery. But, of course, it's such an important piece. They've made posters out of it.
So the fakes have been withdrawn from the galleries?
In my department, too, but that goes back some years. I don't know enough about fakes in other departments to make a comment.
What is the answer? The answer is just to stop?
The answer is that the mayor of New York tomorrow should get up publicly in front of the Board of Trustees and say, right now I order this museum. You hear me, Mr. Bloomberg? I order the Metropolitan Museum of Art to order every curator to stop buying stolen objects right now. That's what should be done tomorrow morning. Next, he should telephone the Italian consul in New York and say, come over here in 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I will personally hand over the Greek vase to you, the Euphronious vase. Come and pick it up.
Ever met Bob Hecht?
No, never met him.
And Marion True?
No, I don't think so. Marion True is the classic curator. Buy every stolen object you can, buy every plundered object you can, except forged documents. In the case of the Coors, they accept the forged documents, which Houghton alleged they didn't know about. They didn't know they were forged. But they knew they were forged from day one. I'm saying this on record. That's the job of the curator. True should get a medal from the directors of the museum for being the curator. Buy stolen art, cover all the tracks, get false documents, swear that all the objects purchased were actually found by peasants in the fields. That's why Truman has been promoted, well paid and powerful.
But what do you think is going to happen with this trial in Rome? Hecht's 86 years old. Do you think he's going to get the Clark, BCCI, Clifford treatment? He essentially gets off with a big fine?
Well, Italian honor is involved here.
It's 94 objects he supposedly trafficked.
Years ago in the 70s, in the cafeteria of this museum, Dietz von Bostrom happened to be at the coffee table where I was, and he was making snarling remarks about those dirty, dishonest Italians who take bribes. The son of a bitch, he was paying the bribes, okay? I will say that if the Italians let True and Hecht go and do not get back the Euphronious vase, there can be only two reasons, stupidity or bribery. There's no other reason why the Italians would let them go. Their whole culture, their whole history is being destroyed by the Houghton Salzburgers, the Comte Philippe, the Shelby White, and the whole board of trustees of the Met, including the mayor of New York City. And they've got to stand up to them.
And the public?
Doesn't know anything about this.
That there's public money invested in the Met?
This is very important. Every stolen object that's purchased or returned, any object a dealer or a collector gives to the museum that is plundered, there's a plunder, a stolen object, the taxpayers are paying for it. The public also does not know that the Metropolitan Museum claims that its administration alone may make public and private statements that relate to academic or curatorial work accomplished or published in academic journals by individual members of the staff. If a staff member calls attention to a crime or solecism of the Met or publishes something, anything on any subject in any journal, I was told by a department administrator, Sharon Cott, the Mets counsel, that unless it was vetted in-house, it is considered improper and irresponsible and subject to penalty. I have a letter from the Montebello threatening to fire me if I speak to anyone about the Metropolitan Museum of Art plundering and stealing antiquities from the countries of origin. And he wrote a letter to the New York Times apologizing for having published a scholarly article in a scholarly journal, without his permission. Does any other tech-supported institution get away with this irresponsible anti-academic freedom behavior? Is this discussed in New York City budget meetings when it is determined how much funding is to be allotted to the Metropolitan Museum, de facto to its trustees? And nota bene, the threat of the Met serves at the pleasure of the trustees, is hired by them, and reflects their interests. They are legally and morally responsible for his actions. Therefore, it is they who are manifestly legally responsible for these letters. It is they who de facto wrote them. The taxpayers pay for the plundered Lydian treasure, which was returned to Turkey. You talked to a man who actually met with the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. I spent days in Washington when they were having hearings. And I testified before Congress, and Moynihan authored the Convention on Cultural Property Information Act in 1983. He diluted the language, indeed, and which weekly ratified the UNESCO Treaty regarding the illegal trade in cultural property. I like Moynihan so much. He came out on the floor to talk to me, and I tried to explain to him all that I'm saying here, and he said, quote, I don't believe this at all. I think this is just third world flagellation of America. End of quote. By the way, he was very close friends with Leon Levy, Shelby White, and Michael Steinhardt. He was very close to all the dealers and collectors. From 1964 to 1970, I thought it was normal to buy antiquities. And then I heard a lecture by Clemency Coggins from Harvard, two lectures. And then I heard Azat Negabond, who had to stay and fight for 11 months in the freezing cold and heat in Iran to protect his life from dealer gangs who beat him up. He appealed to the Shah, and the Shah sent a corps of soldiers to protect him so we could finish execrating one of the most important sites in Iran. So three lectures turned me around, and in 1971 I wrote my first paper that I would not participate in the acquisition of antiquities anymore, and I wrote the administration about this. Not only because I converted, but because it was so obvious after the early 70s that no one, no archaeologist, no museum trader could be unaware of what I'm saying. Clemency Coggins startled it all. Let me see now. When I was fired on February 28th, it had to be okay by the trustees. I met one of them, Francis Plimpton, by accident. I cornered him and discussed all this with him. He said, "We have enough on you." Very polite, I said. "You don't know what I have to say, only what Mr. Hovinger said. We have enough," he said. So the Board of Trustees voted to fire me. One of those who voted to fire me was Bunchy Sulzberger. I dared to speak with one of his reporters without permission of the museum 4 days earlier. Kimmelman doesn't mention this in the article, by the way.